This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Myths, strangeness, trivial pursuits, and popular misconceptions. Hello, I'm Rick Young. Welcome to MythFits, Tales of Mythconceptions. Hello, and welcome to MythFits, Tales of Mythconceptions. I'm Rick Young. We're starting a new book today, Hair of the Dog to Paint the Town Red, The Curious Origins of Everyday Sayings and Fun Phrases by Andrew Thompson. Start from scratch. Meaning versus origin. As mad as a hatter. A son of a gun. To bite the bullet. To be saved by the bell. To be given short shrift. Have you ever wondered where the phrase in the limelight comes from, or what cat got your tongue originally meant? Who was it that painted the town red in the first place? Well, it's time to find out. Phrases from the English language cover every facet of life, but often their meaning doesn't correlate to their origins. In case you weren't aware, military tactics, nautical procedures, politics, entertainment, literature, and an array of other fields form the basis of many expressions that are used today. People are unwittingly quoting history on a daily basis. The varied and bizarre explanations of our everyday phrases never cease to amaze and intrigue people, and probably confuse the life out of anyone whose second language is English. Did you know that to freeze the balls off a brass monkey is in no way offensive, but actually relates to cold temperatures causing cannonballs to fall onto the deck of a ship, or that to eat humble pie originally meant that you were eating offal and entrails known as umbles instead of meat? Everyone knows what letting the cat out of the bag means, but did you know it originates from unscrupulous market vendors substituting cats for more valuable suckling pigs? Most people simply don't have the time to consider the origins of every phrase and idiom that we utter. We take our language for granted, out of necessity, yet many of us are intrigued to know more, and that's where this book comes in. There is often conflicting evidence and more than one possible origin of many phrases. In some cases, the discussion of a single expression could fill half the pages in this book. For these phrases, the most compelling view has been chosen. That is not to say that there are no other possible explanations. These complicated situations just add weight to how intricate our language really is. Hair of the Dog to Paint the Town Red explains the fascinating origins of 400 phrases that we use every day, breaking them up into different categories that will take you on a journey through every aspect of the world. What you'll hear is both weird and wonderful, eccentric and funny, and at times, downright unbelievable. So, stop barking up the wrong tree. Don't rest on your laurels or turn a blind eye, and don't pass the buck. This book will ensure that you never look at the English language again in the same way, from when you start, from scratch right up to the bitter end. Chapter 1, As the Crow Flies, Terms from the Nautical World. Batten down the hatches. This means to prepare for trouble or hard times. In context, here comes the boss and he's in a bad mood. We better batten down the hatches. Batten down the hatches is a nautical phrase that dates back to the early 1800s. Most sailing ships at the time had cargo holds that opened to the deck via hatches, sometimes called hatchways. These hatches were normally left open or simply covered with a grate that allowed for ventilation. When the seas were rough or bad weather was imminent, the ship's captain would call to batten down the hatches to protect the cargo and prevent the hold from getting filled with rain or seawater. The hatches would be covered with canvas tarpaulins that would be held down with strips of wood known as battens to stop them from blowing off. Cut and run, meaning avoid a difficult situation by leaving abruptly. In context, the business was failing, so instead of injecting more money, he decided to cut and run. Cut and run originated in the early 1700s when the cable anchors of ships were made of rope. To raise an anchor took significant time and effort, especially in deep water. If a ship was at anchor and suddenly came under attack, the time to raise the anchor could be costly. To save time and escape with minimal damage, the crew would cut the anchor rope with an axe and allow the ship to run with the wind and escape to safety. The expression was being figuratively used by 1861 when Charles Dickens included it in his novel Great Expectations. First rate, meaning the very best quality. In context, when it comes to universities, Princeton is first rate. First rate is a naval expression dating from the time of King Henry VIII. It was during his reign that the British Navy began organizing his ships according to their size and strength. The warships were rated on a scale of 1 to 6. A small ship with a little armory was considered sixth rate, while the large, well-armed ships were classified as first rate. The expression soon came to be used to refer to anything of the highest quality. Square meal, meaning a nutritious meal. In context, Jenny had been dieting for a month, so was really looking forward to a good square meal. Square meal is yet another nautical phrase. British ships in the 17th century had poor living conditions. The quarters were cramped, and most of the meals were insubstantial. In particular, breakfast and lunch usually consisted of little more than bread and water. However, the final meal of the day did provide some sustenance and generally included some form of meat. The meal was served on a large square tray made of wood, designed and shaped for easy storage. This larger, more nutritious serving became known as a square meal. Whistle for it, meaning a request where you're unlikely to receive what you want. After buying lottery tickets for years without any luck, I figured I was better off whistling for it. Whistle for it has its origins in sailing superstition. Some sailors believed that they could summon the wind on a calm day by, well, whistling for it. The hope was that the wind would blow in symphony with the sailors and fill the sails so the ship could move on. Others disagreed and believed that whistling was devil's music. They feared that whistling for the wind would result in violent storm. Given that a gentle wind or fierce storm rarely appeared, the expression came to mean what it does today. Hunky-dory, meaning everything is fine and okay. In context, the IRS audited the company's books but found that everything was hunky-dory. Hunky-dory began with a group of American sailors in the 19th century. There was a major street in Yokohama, Japan, called Hanshodori. It was well known for housing ladies of ill repute, and when in port after a long voyage, the sailors would frequent the street to partake in the recreational activities being offered. Hunky, meaning sexy, was a play on the similar-looking word honcho, and when dory was added, a phrase was spawned. have someone over a barrel. Helpless at someone's mercy is the meaning, and in context, the police had captured the crime on camera, so they really had the accused over a barrel. To have someone over a barrel alludes to the maritime practice of rescuing a drowning sailor. Once hauled from the water, the other crew members would place the sailor face down over a barrel in order to empty his lungs of water. The sailor would be rolled back and forth in an attempt to expel the water. Being completely helpless and often unconscious, a sailor was totally reliant on other crew members to save him. The cut of your jib, meaning a person's general appearance and demeanor. In context, I'm not sure why I don't like Rod. I think it's just the cut of his jib. Cut of your jib is another expression with naval origins. In common use by the early 1800s, this was used as an idiomatic way in 1824 by Sir Walter Scott in his novel St. Ronan's Well. The jib of a sailing ship is a triangular sail set at the front of the boat. Each country had its own style of jib sail, so the nationality of a ship and whether it was hostile or not could not be determined from its jib. Coupled with this, the jib was thought to be a good indication of the condition of the boat. The jib was responsible for the overall performance of the ship, so a well-cut jib suggested a high-quality ship. Three sheets to the wind, meaning very drunk. In context, Doug had been at the bar all day, and when he came staggering home, he was three sheets to the wind. Three sheets to the wind has nautical origins. Originally, three sheets to the wind, this phrase relates to the sails of tall ships. The sails are controlled by ropes known as sheets, which are fixed to the lower corners of the sails to hold them in a relative place to the wind. If a sheet breaks or comes loose, the sheets are said to be to the wind. If three sheets are loose, the sails will flip wildly about. Having three sheets to the wind will result in the boat becoming completely out of control, much like a stumbling drunk. Footloose and fancy free, meaning from care or responsibility, unattached and single. In context, Hank and his girlfriend had parted ways, so he was footloose and fancy free at the party. Footloose and fancy free is an expression whose origin lies with the early sailing boats. The foot is the bottom part of the sail that is connected to the boom. Sometimes, in strong winds, it would become detached from the boom and was regarded as footloose. A footloose sail would flap around and be free to move whichever way the wind blew. It was considered footloose and fancy free. As the crow flies, meaning in a straight line, the shortest distance between two points. In context, it's only 5 minutes as the crow flies, but it'll take you an hour to get up that windy road. As the crow flies is a nautical phrase as well that dates to the time of the early English explorers. With few navigational aids and no maps, it was important to be able to find land while at sea. The crow was renowned as an intelligent bird that would always fly straight to the nearest food source, which meant land. Ships would always ensure that they had a cage full of crows before they embarked on their journey. A crow would be released from the crow's nest at the top of the mast, and the captain would follow its path it took, usually resulting in the fastest route to land. Tide you over, meaning to supply someone or something they need for a short period. In context, we were able to secure bridge financing to tide us over until our formal loan was approved. Tide You Over has its origins with the sea and, as the phrase suggests, the tide. In the absence of any wind to propel a ship via its sails, captains would use the tide to move the ship. The rising tide was also used to lift a ship over a threatening obstacle such as a reef or a sandbar. The first known usage of the phrase was by British Captain John Smith in his 1627 book, A Sea Grammar, where he wrote, "To tide over to a place is o'er with the tide of ebb and flood, and to stop the contrary by anchoring till the next tide." The expression was being used figuratively by the 1800s. Between the devil and the deep blue sea, meaning between two undesirable alternatives. In context, I had a bad toothache, but the trip to the dentist was going to be painful, too. I was caught between the devil and the deep blue sea. Between the devil and the deep blue sea derives from a traditional wooden sailing boats. Sailors used to use hot tar to seal or caulk the seams between planks to prevent leaking. The seam between two topmost planks on the ship's side was known as the devil seam. It was the longest seam and the closest to water, so it needed regular sealing. This required a sailor to stand at the very edge of the deck or even be suspended over the side. If there was a sudden gust of wind or a large swell, the sailor could get knocked over the edge and find himself between the devil and the deep blue sea. Hard and fast, meaning rigidly adhered to, inflexible. In context, the rules for the fire drill were hard and fast and not to be altered. Hard and fast is a nautical phrase. When a ship is run aground and is firmly beached on land, it is considered hard and fast and is unable to move until the tide comes in. The term was defined in William Henry Smith's 1867 Nautical Dictionary, A Sailor's Word Book, as said of a ship on shore. The term dates from the 1800s and was used in a figurative sense since that time as well. Here's a long shot. Long shot, meaning an attempt that has little chance of success. In context, he knew her agreeing to come to the dance was a long shot, but he decided to ask her anyway. Long shot has its origin in naval warfare of the 1800s. Battleships carried cannons as their major weapons. Although very effective when they hit their targets, the cannons were inaccurate and the cannonballs could only travel relatively short distances. For this reason, most of the battles took place in fairly close quarters. Any shot that was fired at a ship outside the normal range was considered a long shot and unlikely to succeed. Know the ropes, meaning well-versed in something. Context. He's been an engineer for 20 years, and he really knows the ropes. To know the ropes finds its origins with the early sailing vessels. The sails on the ships of the 1600s were controlled by a myriad of ropes and knots, which were all connected in a complicated web. Sailors had to learn the intricate rigging required to raise, lower, and maneuver the sails in order to speed up, slow down, and change direction. The ropes were in constant use, and to fully master these took years of experience. It was only then that a sailor could claim to know the ropes. The phrase was being used figuratively by the late 1800s. touch and go, meaning a risky or precarious situation. In context, Walter almost didn't make it through the surgery. It was touch and go there for a minute. The expression touch and go is another that derives from the sea. When traversing shallow water, the ship's keel might clip a reef or the seabed. If luck is on the side of the captain, the ship may avoid disaster and move on unaffected instead of being completely grounded. It might touch and go. The saying was explained in William Henry Smith's 1867 Nautical Dictionary, The Sailor's Word Book, where he wrote, "Touch and go, said of anything within an ace of ruin, as in rounding a ship very narrowly to escape rocks, and, or when under sail, she rubs against the ground with her keel, without much diminution of her velocity." By and large, meaning in general, on the whole. In context, the final weekend has been wet, but by and large, the month has been dry. By and large is a nautical expression that harkens back to the days of sailing ships. To sail by means to sail facing into the general direction of the wind, while sailing large is the most favorable condition and means to have the wind behind the ship. When the wind was constantly changing around, the captain would be required to sail by and large, both with the wind and against it. By doing this, the ship would continue to progress, but its path was not as direct or accurate as, say, the crow flies. Bitter end, meaning the absolute end, the last extremity. In context, Tim stayed at the party until the bitter end. Bitter end is a nautical phrase and has nothing to do with taste or the ingredient used in drinks. Centuries ago, the anchors of sailing ships were fixed to the decks by solid posts. These posts were known as bitts. The sailors tied colored cloth to the end of the anchor rope near the bit so that when the cloth was reached, the men knew they could not let the anchor out any further. The small area of rope between the cloth and bit was called the bit end, which became known as the bitter end. When the rope was let out to the bitter end, it meant that no more rope remained to be used and the water was too deep. Show your true colors, meaning reveal your true intentions or personality. In context, most people can play the nice guy for a while, but eventually they will show their true colors. Show your true colors is another nautical expression. In early 18th century naval warfare, the flag of a ship's home country was called its colors. Under the Articles of War published in 1557, ship's captains were obliged to run up their country's flag when going into battle in order to identify the nationality of the ship. But as a method of deceiving the enemy, unscrupulous captains would run up a different flag, perhaps to fool the opposing captain into believing they were an ally. By doing this, the ship was able to get within firing range. With the element of surprise on his side, the captain would only then hoist his actual flag and show his true colors before firing on the enemy to gain advantage. Well, under the Articles of War, this was published under the Articles of War in 1757. Dead in the water, meaning without any chance of success, or stalled. In context, A hurricane was forecast for the coast, so our plans for a beach holiday were dead in the water. Dead in the water is a nautical phrase dating to the days before engines were invented. Ships depend on the wind to propel them, and on days where there was no wind to make it come alive, the ship would remain stationary and be considered dead in the water. This had the potential to become a literal expression, particularly if the ship was under attack from the shoreline. I have time for a few more, and all these, again, are nautical. Loose cannon, meaning a person who is unpredictable or out of control. In context, you better steer clear of Chip when he's been drinking, because he's a real loose cannon. Loose cannon is another sailing phrase, and from as early as the 1600s, cannons were mounted on the decks of sailing ships and were used as the primary weapon in battles. As they were very heavy, it is essential for the cannons to be firmly secured. This was often done by mounting the cannons on rollers and fastening them down with ropes. In times of rough seas, or as a result of the violent recoil caused by the firing of the cannon, sometimes the cannon would break free of its restraints. The loose cannons would roll dangerously around the deck, causing damage to the ship and injury to the sailors. In the offing, meaning likely to happen soon, imminent. In context, Helen's interview went very well, and she was sure a job offer was in the offing. In the offing is a nautical expression originating in the early 1600s that came into widespread usage by the late 1700s. The offing is that part of the sea that is visible from or off the shore, the area between the shore and the horizon. In other words, a ship that was in the offing was in sight. A lookout who was watching a ship to arrive would see it approaching when it was in the offing and would know that it would be docking fairly shortly. And we have time for one more. This is a favorite of mine, and we mentioned this earlier. Cat got your tongue? Meaning silent or lost for words. In context, you're not saying there much, Bill. Cat got your tongue or something? Often directed at someone who is silent but expected to speak, cat got your tongue is the common term of the has the cat got your tongue. While some claim the saying began merely as an imaginative way of speaking to children, the likely origin stems from the sea. 17th century, the British Navy used a whip called the cat-o'-nine-tails for administering punishment aboard the ship. The whip was multi-tailed and inflicted incredible pain. When the sailors were flogged, the pain was so severe that it rendered the victim speechless. And that's going to do it for another edition of MythFits, Tales of Mythconceptions. I'm Rick Young, and until next time, don't myth out. Thank you for listening to MythFits, Tales of Mythconceptions.